Blogging the Boys presents Cowboys Radio with Rabs and McCool. Here are your hosts, Rabble Rouser and Landon McCool.
Hello, howdy, and welcome to another edition of Blogging the Boys Cowboys Radio. I'm Landon McCool, and with me, as always, is Rabble Rouser. Rabble, you know, we're kind of just going through the motions to get through this season that unfortunately just seems to continue to grind on, but, you know, I'm at least impressed with the effort that was put forth by the defense in Green Bay. How are you feeling?
Well, I'm actually consulting my mathematical tables and working out all the different permutations that they can get the Cowboys in the playoffs. No, not actually. I'll be honest with you. You know, in some ways I'm relieved because I felt like, you know, this whole mathematical pot, which is still mathematically, you know, it's possible that they can get into the playoffs mathematically, but it becomes increasingly remote, and this weekend it may thankfully be, you know, no longer a possibility. In some ways I'm just relieved, you know, cause I think, and we'll talk about this, I think when we get, you know, to talking about the game, but I think it's time to move on from the kind of delusional space that we've been inhabiting for a long time now, which is that if only X happens, we can still make a run, you know? And I think for most of us that ended when Romo got hurt the second time, but you know, it's continued to be part of the narrative. And even when the Cowboys beat the Redskins and crept back within a game of everybody else, and people started thinking, oh, there's four games left. There's only one game out. We're going to do it. And then Romo's going to come back. And I think that, you know, as the losses mount, we realize that there's, you know, that this is just simply not a viable possibility. So a sense of, I think more than anything, a sense of relief.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it's funny because who would think that relief would come with a loss? But the truth of the matter is, you're right. It's almost like one of those things where you want someone to put the season to it. Out of its misery, you know, it's just because it's this, right, it's right, it's suffering on. So, but we are not suffering on. We are headed, eyes clear, straight ahead. So, what do we have for the show today?
So we're going to be joined by a couple guests first. It's going to be CTC Sports Patrick Walker and Cammy Griffin, who are two of our favorite Cowboys analysts and Twitter must follows for those of you who are not following them. And we'll all get together and chat about their new venture, the Cowboys Packers game, and sort of how we ended up here at 4-9. And then we'll swim upstream with a guy named Scott Salmon from Gangrene Nation, SB Nation's New York Jets site. We'll discuss the Cowboys' upcoming opponent, the J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. But before that, I think we have a couple little newsy things to talk about. The first one, let me put this one on your plate. You can start us off. So today we just learned that the Cowboys released Tyler Patman, which is kind of interesting. And I'm still a little puzzled about the complete reason for that. So what's your take on the Tyler Patman release?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's kind of unfortunate. I was talking about on Twitter earlier that it just, you know, this is one of the few things that they've done that I kind of threw up my hands a little bit. I really wasn't sure. I mean, I thought Tyler Patman had been playing okay. And I also think that no one's playing that great in the defensive secondary right now, but no one's really playing that terrible. And I don't know that Patman's play, you know, played him off the field, but I think it's just one of those things that, you know, they're really just trying to churn the roster and just get new blood in here to see how it's going. And it's ironic because I think the new blood that they added was actually some old blood. It's Terrence Mitchell who seemed to be taking Patman's snaps today in practice. So, you know, I just think that at this point, they had seen what they had thought that they were going to see from Patman, and he hadn't really taken that next step. I mean, there was a lot of promise, I think, when he first signed on as a, you know, he wasn't even a UDFA guy. He was a tryout guy,
right,
who really
right.
caught their eye and got really high praise from guys like Marinelli. And so I think it's, they gave him a shot, an off season, and then a training camp, and I think he never really took the next step that they hoped that he would. And I think, you know, it's just part of that process of churning the roster. And you know, like I said, I threw my hands up a little bit because I thought the kid had been playing well, but honestly, like, I'm all for, you know, I've made the mistake of liking players and wanting them to stay around too long. So I'm going to trust Will McClay on this, that, you know, better to get rid of him a little bit too early than a little bit too late. So, you know, even though he's only 26 or whatever, maybe they had seen what they had seen and they thought it was just time to get somebody else in there. What about you?
Yeah. I mean, and I agree. And I think that, you know, you said earlier, he wasn't even a UDFA. So he's the kind of guy who has to play really well and improve steadily all the time because it costs them absolutely nothing to get rid of him. And so, you know, he didn't do that. And so he's gone. But, you know, one of the things that I'm struck most by this and by the fact that they released Corey White also earlier in the season is, you know, one of the things that I think that I know that Dan Turner and I talked about, and I think you and I talked about this a lot. You know, we played this kind of game where we'd say, let's rank the various position groups.
Yeah.
And one of the groups that consistently came out on top was the secondary and the cornerbacks specifically, not necessarily the safeties, but the corners. I felt like this was the deepest, most talented and biggest in many ways in terms of size, groups of corners the Cowboys had fielded in years. Maybe, and as long as I can remember. You know, this is, of course, before Skandrick got hurt. But Corey White seemed to be, you know, doing a lot of the same things that Byron Jones was capable of doing. And there were many practices where people, you know, scouts and scouting types who I trust to some degree were saying that, you know, it looks like Tyler Patman had one of the best practices. He's really growing. He's feisty. You know, he's a tough guy. He's kind of like a little junior Skandrick. And, you know, as the guy who was going to basically be Skandrick's stand-in, and then, you know, going to be playing for him when Skandrick got injured, I thought, well, that's great. It's a really nice comparison, really nice fit. And so they had a bunch of long corners, and then they had a bunch of sort of, they had a couple of sort of tiny, you know, 5'10"-ish slot guys who were tough and feisty and one with quickness. And so I thought, this is a really great group. And we're having to rethink that now.
Yeah.
You know, three of those guys aren't around. Mo Claiborne is probably well enough to play, or else they probably wouldn't have released Patman. But and obviously Byron Jones has been the standout rookie of the group. But I think that, you know, they've played well, but they weren't the kind of group that had the kind of depth and presence that I think we imagined they might have, you know, way back at training camp. And, you know, this is the conversation we're going to be having this week, next week, and on into the near future is, you know, there's another group that didn't end up playing quite like we thought they were when we observed them in training camp. Why not? And, you know, the why not is going to be a lingering question. But I think we can all agree right now that this group hasn't fulfilled the promise that we thought they might when we were ranking them the first or second strongest position group, you know, in August.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, part of the, you know, Will McClay and Stephen Jones and Garrett, you know, triumphant or whatever we're calling it, is one of the, you know, part of their long-term scheme is when things aren't working, you know, change it. And I think that that's something that, you know, there's been times that I felt like maybe we got rid of guys before I'd like to see them go. But at the same time, like I think it was a lot worse to hold on, like I said, hold on to guys that weren't going anywhere, that weren't developing, that weren't taking the next step and getting better. So I am glad that they're not just sitting on their hands. You know, I am glad that even though the, you know, the season is essentially over, you know, they're trying to get this roster ready for the off season. And really at this point for teams like us, and it's been a while since we've been in a situation like this. I think you said it was 2010 maybe. And that sounds about right. Where when we were, you know, when December didn't really matter. So you know, we're one of those teams that's kind of just you know, aligning its squad for the off season, seeing what some of these guys can do, and getting them ready to see who we want for our off season roster to kind of be in our off season program. And I think that this, you'll see a lot of kind of practice squad poaching and roster churning that's going to happen in this last month as teams start try to figure out exactly, if they're not in the playoff hunt, that is, this teams try to start figuring out exactly, you know, what they want their teams to look like going into the offseason. So,
yeah, I think that, you know, that roster turning is a good idea. I think it's always good to have people, especially guys at the bottom of the roster, scared for their jobs all the time, because that means they're pushing and there's upward pressure that you know, pushes all the way through to the top of the roster, ideally. I think the thing, though, is that there better be a reason that the guys in the locker room can see why Patman got released. Because if they begin to sense that the Cowboys are releasing guys just to release them, then I think then there's going to be a problem. If they can see, hey, this is the way we want to win or lose. This is the way we want to conduct ourselves. And number 26 was not doing that, so he's gone. Then they can say, okay, you know, I got to conduct myself in the way that I'm asked to, or I'm out of here. And that actually makes sense and actually sort of strengthens the locker room and strengthens the culture, et cetera. If this seems like a desperation cut because we're like, well, we want to start just churning, you know, guys will look around the locker room and see that releases like this seem, I guess random is the best word. And that's not going to, in fact, help the culture.
I agree. And I think at this point, you know, if, you know, the team still has to keep up appearances that they are still trying to win. So, you know, I think they, you know, there may be some thought as to, well, why not just hold on to this guy, you know, and see if he can develop another year. But I think you lose that appearance of doing everything you can to try to win if you just kind of allow status quo to, you know, maintain for the last, you know, 4 or 5 weeks of the season. So, you know, like I said, I definitely kind of was not 100% sure why this went down. I'm sure there's more information that we don't have yet, maybe about practice habits or just performance thoughts in general. But I can't say that it's necessarily that surprising that somebody was getting cut. So, and I guess we should move on to the actual Green Bay game. Yeah,
it's hard to say, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's hard to say. I was gonna say the Green Bay Dallas game, but really it was just Green Bay that was there. But no, Well, I guess why don't you start? I mean, what are your immediate thoughts about the game, and do you have any? And did you end up even watching this game, Rabble?
I did. I watched every play.
Okay,
and
that's good because we're doing a podcast on it right now. So
that's right. That's right. So my thoughts. My thoughts were this. It's sort of interesting because I feel like this game could be interpreted in one of two ways. You know, one of which is, oh, this looks like a more of the same, mm-hmm. right? This is a team that was one touchdown behind with 5 minutes left to play, couldn't make a play, couldn't make an offensive play, couldn't get a defensive stop, had several opportunities. So there were about, I think, three possessions for each team when the score was 14-7. And the Cowboys' defense was actually playing quite well during that stretch. Mm-hmm. And not allowing Green Bay to do much of anything really with the ball, and certainly not allowing them to extend their lead. And the offense just muddled about and couldn't do anything. Shot themselves in the foot, got themselves in you know, behind the chains, long situations, et cetera, and basically did nothing with those opportunities. And so we've seen this before. And then eventually the defense seemed to tire, and Green Bay had one long drive and then another shorter touchdown drive after the Cowboys turned the ball over on downs. So in that respect, it seemed, you know, very much like one of the games, you know, that we saw earlier in the season against, you know, the Giants or Seattle or New Orleans or Atlanta, any of those games where they were close but not close enough, and neither unit could make a play at the end. And on the other side, however, you know, when we look at the stats from the game, when we look at the difference in yards, when we look at the difference of plays run, when we look at the difference in the quarterback ratings, all of those kind of statistical indicators, it actually resembles the Carolina and New England games a lot more. I think the Cowboys somehow, valiantly perhaps, managed to keep this close, right in the midst of what proved to be a pretty big butt kicking. It was quite a big disparity in yards and average per play. I think that in some ways the only thing that kept the Cowboys in the game were two long runs of 45 or more yards by Darren McFadden. The Cowboys had one completed pass in the Packers side of the field.
It was to Witten, right? On the three.
10-yarder Witten that got the ball down close before they then, you know, and that one long drive before they then end up throwing an interception at the end zone. You know, the Cowboys could not mount any or sustain any kind of drive. The one drive they had was this sort of like lightning in a bottle, you know, drive, five-play drive, but it was all on the ground. And so they had some big plays that kind of made it seem like they were more in the game than perhaps they really were. And and Green Bay didn't need to pass the ball much. You know, Rodgers had like I think 218 yards passing. Didn't need to pass the ball because they ran the ball. They ran the ball as effectively as anybody has in a couple of years, probably since last Thanksgiving anyway, where Philadelphia ran the ball. But Philadelphia had 44 rushing attempts. Green Bay didn't have that many attempts, but ran the ball pretty consistently. Ran it a little bit early and then really ran it a lot late. And because they could. And, and you know, the Cowboys seemed tired and maybe even a little bit at the end disinterested, just slightly. So I'm not sure where I place this game. I will say, though, that it felt familiar because there were games, no matter how you want to interpret it, there were games that we've seen earlier in this season that played themselves out in similar fashion.
You know, I mean, I feel like I've said this in kind of one form or another, but this is another game where this is the going into this game for me, and I had the sheen of logic over my emotions,
right? The veil of logic was drawn.
Yes, yeah. and it was going to block out all the external stuff that was going to tell me, you know, oh, they have a chance to win. All of it went out the window as soon as the first decent good play happened for the Cowboys, and I was just right back into rooting and just like, God, we're gonna win this game. We gotta win this game. You know, but the truth is that I recognized that at some point, you know, like because I really did make a conscious effort to kind of just, you know, take an analytical approach to this game because I just didn't really feel like, I mean, we're going into Green Bay and we're facing Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay with Matt Cassel. I mean, that's just, it's just ridiculous to have any hope that that's going to happen, right? And honestly, what that ended up leading me to was a very kind of sober look at a lot of, you know, the criticism that the team is receiving right now. And not that they don't, you know, listen, if you lose in the NFL, and especially in Dallas, you're going to just get it. Like, it's happening. There's no way around it, right? It doesn't really matter, like, at what level you're playing or at what level you know, you're performing or not performing, you're going to, I mean, if the end result is you're losing a lot of games, you're just going to get roasted. And honestly, I think that part of the problem is created by the fact that the Cowboys, and I'm not saying that this is something that they should do, but part of the fact that the problem is that the Cowboys won't quit. You know, if they were getting blown out, I think a lot of these people would just be like, well, this is just a terrible team, and they just completely outclass and outmatch. And that may be the truth in most of these games, frankly, without Romo behind this team and without the people that are injured at, you know, at certain different periods of the season. But the truth is that this team, for better or for worse, won't quit and have kept themselves in a position where they're basically constantly in all these games. And I think that what I realized that is if we were to go back to our preseason expectations and our preseason talk, right, and we were to go back and look at the schedule as it was constituted back then and thinking about the teams that we were going to play and the kind of, you know, we even described it as kind of a murderer's row of that first, what, yep, month and a half of games. Mm-hmm. And that was back when Romo was, you know, still healthy Romo, and we're getting 2014 Romo back, right? And so what I'm getting at is that even then, even with all the optimism in the world that we had in training camp and before the season started, like, this looked like an extremely tough schedule that whole first part of the season. And now, you know, now, like, if I were to go back then and tell you that we would have no Romo, and not only no Romo for, you know, 95% of the season, but no Dez as well, right? Then, and then tell you that we were actually, you know, competitive in all but, let's say, just not the Patriots and Panthers game, we get laughed out of the building. And to me, that's all about Jason Garrett and about the culture that's created in this locker room, right? And so I guess my larger point is that because of that, because of this team's refusal to just lay down or to quit at all, they've somehow willed themselves into some of these games despite being vastly outflanked in talent and scheme because of the lack of talent. And I think it what it does is that it makes the fall for Cowboys fans that much more painful, right? Because they
and
see
you know what, yes,
because
yes.
they see that they see us succeeding on the field, and then they just assume, well, why can't they win? Well, it's probably because Garrett mismanaged the end, or it's probably because they didn't call this play call or this play call, and not thinking of the larger picture that oh my God, well we have 8,000 plays that we think Romo can work. Now we're dealing with a quarterback who wasn't even here in training camp. So that plays now we've got about what 50 plays. I mean, you know, like I mean, not taking into account the scope of how much the coaching job has changed without you know key players that you were counting on in the season. I mean, it's one thing to lose your starting right guard or your starting defensive tackle for the season, but to lose like your number one corner and your number one quarterback. And your number one offensive weapon for a good majority of the season, that makes for an incredible, difficult, daunting coaching job. And considering how close we were in some of those games, it really is kind of more of a miracle than a damnation on Garrett's coaching scheme, is in my mind. And maybe I'm being too much of a homer on this, but honestly, like this talk about you know firing Garrett is so ridiculous. Like anybody. Could you know prep the entire offseason for having your all-star quarterback and then suddenly have him gone for the whole season and then just turn around a first place schedule into a playoff race is way beyond hope. It's unreasonable and it's setting a high expectation level, and it's the kind of thing that this team used to do, where they would set unreasonable goals. Their coach didn't make it in the time frame that they had set, and then they would fire the guy before he got a real chance to do it. I.e., Chan Gailey is really where I'm going. But mm-hmm. I hate to see that kind of thing happen again, just because people don't have the wherewithal to kind of take a step back and take a 10,000 foot view of where this team is.
And the thing I was going to say earlier is that applies to individual games this year, but I think it also applies to seasons in 2011, 12, and 13.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, I mean, I know that Cowboys Nation is very frustrated. And of course, you know, NFL Nation's laughing at the Cowboys all the time because, you know, three straight years they were 8-8. That's the definition of mediocrity. They couldn't win that week 17 game any year. And when nobody's really talking about much, we've talked about it. But very few people are talking about this, is the fact that those were probably, in terms of talent, 5-11 teams that Romo and Garrett and Bailey and, you know, some of them, Witten and some of those guys sort of willed into a position where they actually had a chance that last game to do something meaningful. Excuse me. And so I think we're seeing that play out on a sort of game by game basis this year.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And it makes it really tough to kind of get a sober look at it from, you know, the Cowboys fandom, because everyone's just pulling their own hair out about how close we are, you know, and how close this is. And the truth of the matter is, I mean, again, even if we were to fall backwards into the playoffs at this point, if everyone in the NFC East just lost the rest of their games, and I can't remember who would have to lose week 17 for us to get. I think the Giants have to lose the red. No. Well, it doesn't matter. But the point is that even if like all those things fell right, we'd still be entering the playoffs with Matt Cassel as our quarterback, you know, against Seattle in Seattle. It's
probably.
Like, I mean, you know, it's like, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, what's the point? I think to argue or to say that, you know, the coaching staff is the one that failed us is to ignore the obvious points, the obvious elements that are happening, and I understand that people are just generally angry and lashing out, but like let's just take a little bit of logic when we're evaluating this season, I think, and maybe that requires the season being over for people to do that.
I think that's probably right, and whether it's over because they're eliminated or over because it's over, I guess remains to be seen. Let me ask you this, and this in some ways you may have already answered this question, but I've been thinking about this season, and given our expectations going in, which we've talked about a lot here in this conversation, Is this the most disappointing season in your Cowboys fandom? And if not, where does it rank?
I have to get my seasons mixed up, but I think that this is less disappointing than you might need to help me. Was 2007 the year that the Giants beat us in the first round? Or was that 2008?
Yes.
Okay, I can't remember. I can't remember.
2007.
I can't remember if it's the 2007 season or 2008. Oh, but anyways, yeah, I would say that 08 might be a bit more disappointing than this, just because what transpired. It just seems like the rug got pulled out more than anything, you know, and that's really you've kind of got some bad vibes early on, but then suddenly it's just like everything just fell out from under you, and so it's almost more shock than anything. I think 2008 maybe, and honestly, like, I mean, if I'm going personally, as a 10-year-old kid, I didn't understand. I didn't understand Cowboys football without Tom Landry. So 1989, when the team just did terrible with its new head coach, I didn't understand that that's not unusual for a new head coach not to do well. I kind of was hoping that, you know, that they would come in, and I mean, I was nine, you know, what do I know? And but that was, I think, you know, on an emotional level, an extremely disappointing season just because of how terrible the team was. Yes, as far as like expectations not being met, 2008 maybe slightly above this, but only because of how quickly things just fell apart and like I said, the rug got pulled out from under us. What about you?
You know, 2000, well, that's interesting because it seems like the candidates, like I don't know that we can say like 1994, which is when they lost to the 49ers in the NFC Championship game, was disappointing because they fulfilled expectations. And you get to the NFC Championship game, and then it's a crapshoot. You know, yeah. So I mean, it was a horrible, horrible loss that I can't even bear to remember. But it wasn't a disappointing season. So I think you're right. You know, you've named the two candidates here, right? So the candidates are either the 2008 season, which follows that wonderful 13-3 2007 season when they lost to the Giants in the in the divisional round. Mm-hmm. And the other option would be the 2010 season, which follows that 2009 campaign where they also had a first round wild card win and then lost it again in the divisional round, this time to the Vikings. You know, 2008, I might be inclined to agree, because if you remember that season, they started off by blowing out Cleveland.
Yeah.
They had a rousing Monday nighter against the Eagles and pulled that one out, and then went to Green Bay and obliterated the Packers and looked like they were going to be world beaters. And then they got upset by Washington, but then they came back and they sort of toyed with Cincinnati and destroyed Cincinnati, and then the wheels fell off.
I mean, just completely.
And it ended, if you remember, I mean, I try not to, but if you remember, that season ended with that 44-6 debacle in Philadelphia.
Yes, I do remember, actually.
You know, that was that was pretty awful. Yeah. So 2010, so in some ways it's very different because that team never was good. I mean, they started the season with that horrible loss to the Redskins, that 13-7, like, Tashard Choice fumble right before the halftime game. Yeah. And it was just a brutal, brutal game. And the season was awful, and they were bad, and they were getting blown out all the time. So that was the real difference between this one and that one is as we were talking about earlier. You know, toward the end, those last couple of games before Wade Phillips was fired, they were just getting. I mean, you know, it was like 48-7 and 35-13, and you know, 38-17, and those kind of, you know, really, really brutal blowout losses.
Yeah, and also there was some hope. There was some hope at the end of that season too, at least, you know, like, because Garrett took over and the team started to look a lot better. So, you know, at least you ended the season on as much of a high note as a losing team can, you know, and it's this is just like it's like recutting yourself every week and then pouring lemon juice in it. It's terrible.
I do think, and maybe this is recency bias speaking, but I do think that going into this season, I thought this team was better than the 2008 team.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I thought this team was better than, and the question is, did I think going into the season that this team was better than I thought the 2008 team was going, that was going into the 2008 season? I don't know that I can answer that because, you know, obviously we have historical hindsight that allows me to recalibrate my understanding and expectations for that team. But I remember thinking this team was pretty loaded all the way around. And, you know, I'm sure I was obviously deluding myself to some degree, but there's also just been just an unbelievable run of bad luck. In 2008, they had a little bit of bad luck, but it was mostly just that they were bad.
Well, and I think the other thing, that too, that's worth mentioning is that, you know, that 2008 team was a lot older than this team was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is part of the reason that it doesn't feel so terrible to me as it did then, is because that team needed a rebuild to get back into an actual competition mode. And that was a part of the problem too, is that the team didn't recognize that necessarily. The whole offensive line needed a rebuild, and no one wanted to really talk about it until, frankly, it was too late and everyone was way too old to play. But this team, at least, you know, I mean, look, it's terrible to watch us lose these games, but the shining point of that is that you do at least get to see guys like DeMarcus Lawrence and, you know, who's really started to come on the last few games and, you know, had a really great game. Randy Gregory had one of his best games last week. And it's worth mentioning because he had, you know, it's taken him a while to kind of find his way. And with pass rushers, it usually does. And I think that this is, you know, kind of the larger argument, and it kind of segues nicely to our last little topic, is this is kind of the larger argument for why you don't ever consider tanking, right? Because if you go in with the same mindset of trying to get better each week and trying to do your best to win every single game, then you're going to get better. Even if you're losing the games, your younger guys are going to get better because they're working towards winning. They're working hard to try to win. And if you try to, you know, ease off the gas on these guys, or try to tell them that it's okay to, like, take it easy, or, you know, take, you know, to pull it, rein it in a little bit and make sure you don't get hurt, then that's how they're going to play. And that's how they're, you know, they'll learn that laziness, or not laziness, but that 85% mentality as opposed to 100% mentality. They'll learn that that's an acceptable percentage to practice and to perform at. And if you don't practice at 100%, it's the same reason Tony does all his reps at 100%. Like, he doesn't, because if you don't, then you're wasting your time, really. And that's why I'm glad they're not wasting this time. Even though we may not get any wins, and the wins may, you know, negatively affect our quote-unquote draft position, it's not invaluable. It's extremely valuable to get all these young players who are going to be the core of your team these reps now in games that may not be meaningful, so that when they are meaningful later, they're better players than they were at this time last year.
I agree. And I think that, you know, this harkens us back to week 17 last year. You remember that the Cowboys clinched the division by beating the Colts in week 16. Mm-hmm. And then there was a lot of speculation about resting guys, especially DeMarco Murray, because remember, he had a broken hand.
Yeah.
A couple of the guys were banged up a little bit. And there was a lot of speculation about whether the Cowboys rest them. And Jason Garrett, in fact, told, you know, the national guys, but also some of the local media, no. I remember 2007. That great year we were just talking about that ended in such disappointment, when you know, we'd won the division and we eased off the pedal a little bit. And I think the key here is not that you want to play the game, right? This is the thing that we stressed when we talked about week 17 last year and the Cowboys' behavior, because they left their starters in until deep into the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I mean, deep into the fourth quarter, like maybe a couple, 3 minutes left. And so you'd say, well, the game was in hand. Why would you do that? And I think there's a couple, you know, you want to send a message to the team that, you know, you don't let off the gas off the pedal. But I think the thing you're talking about is really, really important, and perhaps even more important, which is you don't want anyone to be allowed to even consider that you practice to do anything other than to play and win.
Absolutely.
Right? So, you know, and if this is a coaching staff that's all about the process, then, you know, the thing that we forget as fans, we think about Sunday to Sunday to Sunday, and the thing that we forget about for the most part is Tuesday through Saturday. And the thing is they are all about Tuesday through Saturday. Like, that's the thing they're focusing on. And then they just say, let's see what happens on Sunday. And so, if you are saying, well, what happens this Sunday doesn't matter, then you're saying that what happens Tuesday through Saturday doesn't matter. And
exactly.
Tuesday through Saturday is the thing that matters more than anything for this coaching staff. And so this is why you're so right about, you know, this issue of tanking, whatever that really means in football. I'm not sure. I don't know how you can play NFL football and quote unquote tank, because it requires extreme effort. But they want. And I think that the point that you made about young players developing is really important here, because it's young players develop Tuesday through Saturday. They may then go onto the field and make a couple of great plays like we're seeing DeMarcus Lawrence do. But he's not making sacks, you know, those last couple Sundays because he's been playing in previous Sundays.
Yes.
He's been making it because he's been going full tilt bogey 110% on Tuesday through Saturday for you know 8 to 10 weeks, and he's getting, you know, here's this message from the process again, incrementally better, you know, each of these times where he goes 110%, and finally it crosses this kind of invisible envelope, and he's just a little bit quicker and just a little bit stronger, and suddenly it's manifesting itself in plays. Excuse me. And so that's precisely why you don't ever, you know, ease off the pedal or you know, tank or whatever you want to call it. But let me actually ask you one final question before we sign off. And, you know, a couple of the young guys you brought up were Randy Gregory and Tank Lawrence, both of whom I agree are starting to really shape up and are beginning, I think, we've seen flashes during training camp and earlier, you know, both last season for Lawrence and earlier this season for Gregory, of the things that merited those, you know, first and second day selections. But I think we're really starting to see that now. We're starting to see, you know, really nice flashes from both of them. You know, Gregory's still not quite there in terms of that playmaking force, but he's getting better. I guess the question I have for you is, does their visible increase in performance make Hardy expendable?
I think he makes the conversation a lot easier to digest. I think if they don't show signs the last few weeks, then you've got a real tough conversation to have at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. I think now, and again, we don't necessarily want to get into draft talk, but I think now what you might be able to consider is maybe letting Hardy walk and then replacing him with someone in the draft, mm-hmm. you know, a high pick in the draft. Maybe not even necessarily at the same position, but maybe, you know, I haven't watched anybody yet, but I know that Joey Bosa kid's supposed to be pretty good and he may be available. And, mm-hmm. so, you know, I think it makes swallowing losing him a lot easier if you decide to go that route. Because, you know, like last few weeks, he hasn't actually been spectacular. He's been fine. He's been good, but he hasn't been great by any stretch of the imagination. So I think that's where we're at. So I think this is a good spot to go ahead and bring in Patrick and Cammy for their section. Before we do, I want to make sure we plug Blogging the Boys. Blogging the Boys is your one-stop shop for all Cowboys information, so make sure you hit bloggingtheboys.com for all updates. If you want to look at playoff scenarios, I'm sure they're going to have them there, but they'll also have great film breakdowns, you know, information about the churn that we talked about, everything up to date, including, you know, potential reasonings why they did this and that. So make sure you check bloggingtheboys.com all the way through the rest of the season and into the off season. Follow them on Facebook, Blogging the Boys, and on Twitter at Blogging the Boys.
It is my distinct pleasure to welcome the great Patrick Walker and Cammy Griffin into the studio. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us, man. We're happy to be here.
We're thrilled to have you. It's long overdue. So let me just tell everyone out there, Patrick, if you don't know him, which if you don't, it's a crime against internet humanity. is a self-proclaimed serial troll killer, an expert in Romology, and he's right on both those counts, by the way. Whose work has been seen at the Landry Hat, among other places. His voice has been heard everywhere. He is the co-host of Starstruck Radio. He's a recurring guest on KD's Cowboys Crunch Time Radio, and has also been heard on Inside the Stars Cowboys Cast Radio. Plus, Patrick is one of the Cowboys Twitter Sphere's must-follows, where he dispatches trolls and dispenses reason with equal fury.
Wow.
He is joined as a must-follow in the Cowboys Twitter Sphere by the most excellent Ms. Griffin, whose Cowboys analysis and opinion on a wide variety of topics have been seen at Cover 32 and at the Landry Hat, and also heard on Cowboys Cast Radio. You may notice that the last of these were part of Patrick's bio as well. In fact, they worked together at Landry Hat, and after joining forces there, Cammie and Patrick decided to join forces, like in all caps, join forces. So in late August, they launched CTC Sports, which is a site that, as it says, presents the truth without the traditional media slant. As that's something we at BTB can definitely get behind, we're thrilled to have both of you here because that's something that the sort of Cowboys interwebs needs more of. So I'll tell you what, let's start there for no other reason that it allows us to stave off talk of that ugliness in Lambeau. So tell us a little bit about CTC Sports. What's the impetus behind it? What is the site all about? What are you guys up to there? What are your long-term goals, et cetera?
Yeah, so Patrick and I wrote for several of the same sites, as you mentioned, over the past few seasons. And about midway through last season, we were speaking to each other about how we wish we had a site where the writers could write whatever they want, whenever they want, as long as it was relevant to the Cowboys. So that's what we decided to come together to do. We ended up getting with one of my close friends who is a developer and just built the site out from scratch. Our goal was to get away from clickbait, rumors, and any other distractions and just deliver facts from an optimistic yet realistic standpoint. So we're in the process of finding more experienced writers to add to the site. That way we can deliver as much content as possible. But our long-term goals are to eventually build sister sites off of CTC Sports, beginning with several other NFL teams and creating an app for mobile as well.
Well, that's very ambitious and exciting stuff. I know that that's.
I think it sounds like SB Nation is going to have some competition.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so maybe we should stop this interview right now, Rao.
That would be nice.
We might be in trouble. So I guess we've delayed this as much as we can. I mean, all we have heard about is your long and extensive history and about your goals for your future. So I guess at this point we have to discuss the unfortunate Packers game. I've heard pundits say it resembled other close losses this season. Games where the Cowboys were in it and until late in the game, and others believe it was more closely resembled the New England and Carolina losses in which the Cowboys were just simply outclassed. Where do you guys fall along this spectrum? Pat, why don't you answer first?
Well, I personally don't think we were outclassed at all. My take on it is simply, you look at a Green Bay team that is without Jordy Nelson. They started off strong with, you know, bringing back James Jones and everything, but he's kind of, you know, staved off a little bit and leveled back out. It's a very pedestrian Green Bay offense with a Green Bay defense that's not getting to the passer like they, you know, like the Green Bay of recent history. So you're talking about Aaron Rodgers being up only a touchdown on the Cowboys led by an absolutely impotent quarterback in Matt Castle. that's to me is not being outclassed. That is showing that Green Bay has unbelievable vulnerability, but the Cowboys are just a mess right now with the quarterback situation, and we just don't have anyone that's leading the team, and we just couldn't capitalize. I mean, look at the first drive. You see what happened there, and it just kind of went downhill from there. We had flashes of greatness with the defense, getting the Aaron Rodgers, pressuring him. Had some trouble with the run, but it was more of a bend-don't-break. We had the huge goal line stand on fourth and short. But the defense just finally got gassed. So if you look at the final score, you'd say, oh, well, we were outclassed. If you actually watch football, you can see that we weren't outclassed at all. We just you know, ran out of gas in the fourth quarter. And even then, I mean, Aaron Rodgers didn't turn into the, you know, supposed Aaron Rodgers that he normally is, the MVP caliber. I mean, those last couple of touchdowns, they were runs. And they were on a defense that had been on the field for almost 40 minutes out of a 60-minute contest. So, no, this was not being outclassed. This was just the Cowboys losing another game that they should have won.
Cammy, what do you think? Outclassed or out of time?
I'm actually on a similar page as Patrick right now. I don't think we were outclassed or blown out in really any game this season. I know it might seem that way in the Patriots, Panthers, Packers game, etc. But I feel like we were in all those games either into the second half or even deep into the second half or leading in the fourth quarter. So if one or two plays would have gone our way on offense, maybe even just the first half of that game or literally just one other play on defense or offense, it's possible we'd be looking at a closer score and or outcome. But overall, I think that's exactly the summary of this season. We're just a play or two away from being 10-3 this season, just as we are a few plays away from being absolutely winless. So it's mind-blowing and really hard to digest, considering the NFC East should be a cakewalk for us this season. But just as easy as it is to say we could have won those, we could have lost every game we've won as well.
Well, that's a bit of sobering truth. So, you know,
the only game we were outclassed in is the Panthers game. That's it.
I can't disagree with that. And that was an old take you behind the barn and you know take out the bet on your bare butt kind of game. That was a tough one.
That's what that was.
Yeah, you know, I mean the Packers game, they were down by a touchdown with 5 minutes left. It was a close game till the bitter end there. And that particular game compounded an already awful and, except for a few unlikely yet mathematically possible scenarios, a long dead season. I don't know about you guys. I don't know what you thought about the Cowboys going into the 2015 campaign, but I've been rather taken aback by what has transpired. So before we get to figuring out like what the hell happened this year, I'd like to sort of check in and see what were your expectations going into the season? Has anything gone as expected?
It's really hard to find something that's gone expected. I think you could look at the easy route for that and say, obviously, Bailey might be the only, if not the most expected performance this season. He's clutch as always. Same with Sean Lee. I thought Collins and Byron Jones have lived up to their hype as well. But I honestly didn't expect as good of a record this season, simply because what the Cowboys were able to accomplish last year, especially being undefeated on the road, is really hard to do in the NFL no matter what. Who's that quarterback, whatever. I wasn't, however, expecting to be this dysfunctional without Romo behind center, so that was kind of a slap in the face. But I'll touch more on that later on. But really, there's not much that went expected this season. I guess you could say I expected our defense to be a little better or improve a little from last year. And for the most part, I've been content with how they've played. I mean, obviously, they're dead last in takeaways, but let's be honest, our defense is what has kept us in many of these games or even kept them close for us this season, even if we lost them. But even with that horrendous record and hardly any takeaways, our defense is still ranked in the top 10 for yards allowed. So I was pretty happy with that.
And personally, coming off of the season we had last year, especially in the manner in which it ended, obviously this was supposed to be a revenge tour. There is no way, shape, or form that anyone, and I challenge anyone to show me proof that they believe that this season would be as horrific as it is now. There's one thing to say, you know, well, you know, injuries play a part, but it's who is injured, and it's the flat-out inability for other players to step up for whatever reason and, you know, circumvent that and overcome that. I mean, it started with Orlando Scandrick, huge loss on the defense, a lot bigger than a lot of people. It turns out to be a lot bigger than a lot of people thought at the time. They said, oh, well, you know, we have, you know, Corey White and, you know, Patman is showing potential from some preseason flashes and last year and things of that nature. Well, okay, well, Corey White's out the door and we all know what happened with Patman effective today. We don't have any takeaways. Let me rephrase. We have takeaways, but it's not even worth mentioning because we're still 32nd in the league. But it's maddening because it goes back to what Cammy was saying. Dead last in the league in takeaways, which is a complete flip from last season. However, it's still a top 10 defense and top 5 in a couple of categories. So it's really a Twilight Zone type of season. Coming in, I thought we were going to build on last season. I didn't think necessarily 14-2 or 15-1, nothing astronomical of that nature. I thought we could at least match at 12-4, maybe go 11-5, but we will be right back in the position to contend for the Super Bowl. But Romo went down, and you know, our season went with it. He came, hope came back. He went down, hope went back out with it. And for whatever reason, and I've been defending, you know, Coach Garrett all season for the decisions he's been making, but I can't defend him for, you know, trolling us with Matt Castle. I don't know what's going on there. So, but to answer the final part of it, what I liked in this season, and, you know, to Cammy's point, it hasn't been much. Byron Jones has turned out to be an absolute stud. And DeMarcus Lawrence is starting to come on. He's starting to justify when we took him in the draft. So that's very promising. And hopefully Randy Gregory, you know, he's going to start turning that corner now that DeMarcus is, because you just can't cover all four guys. You got Hardy on one side, and then you got the rotation of, you know, DeMarcus and Lawrence. So those are looking good as far as the front four. But other than that, I don't know, because even Team McFadden, Cammy and I, we led that charge. But last the Green Bay game was the first time he figured out what direction north was.
So, and then once he broke into the open field, he had a distinctly DeMarco Murray-esque quality.
Yeah,
you know, like running into his blockers, not just you know, running straight to the end zone, weaving back and forth to allow guys to catch up to him,
getting outrun by his guard.
Yeah,
Lyle was stride for stride. It should have been a home run hit, but the fact that Collins is right there with you should let you know that, you know, you're probably not going to get a touchdown. So I don't know. We all know, or we should all be in agreement that McFadden is not the long-term answer. We knew that when we were championing him over that other guy who got released, who shall remain nameless. But nonetheless, we do expect him to at least shoulder the load, but you know, Turbin is showing some great flashes. So maybe time to just give him a little bit more than just spell carries.
All right, McFadden should have pitched it to Lyle Collins to let him take it the rest of the way.
Might as well.
We're at that point.
All right, damn it. There are four smart Cowboys fans here, so let's try and figure out what has gone wrong, okay? Since we could talk for a week about all the various problems and malfunctions and bad decisions that have gotten us here, I'll try to limit this to the most important. What, in your opinion, are the top five reasons the Cowboys are 4-9 instead of 9-4?
Oh, this is hard. I'll go with coaching. And let me say this before I go into this. I'm actually someone who has backed up Garrett for the past several seasons. But this could probably take up all five of my points, because I feel like this is the centerpiece to all of the problems I mentioned. It just doesn't feel like Garrett or Linehan has approached any game this season in a commanding fashion. It seems like every time our offense has been on the field, they're playing not to lose or just be content with keeping the game close. There's been several times where I've thought they should have gone for it on 4th-and-1, especially with our horrendous execution on 3rd-down recently. Settling for field goals when you know your offense may not even make it to the opposing 10-yard line the remainder of the game, which is sad. Not taking enough chances. We aren't running more out of the spread when that's shown to be successful. Anything at this point, I think Garrett should have gone into the past 5 or 6 games with nothing to lose. I don't think we're utilizing some of our players appropriately. Turbin comes to mind off the top of my head. Overall, some of the play calling this season has just made me question why way too often throughout the game. And it just says a lot how they've handled the backup quarterback position over the past few seasons. I think we could all agree with that. Not having a serviceable system backup on the roster when Romo went down is just inexcusable. I think penalties is another one that have killed drives or extended opponents' drives. That seems like it happens at least once or twice a game. The offensive line fall off, I think we miss Callahan more than we thought we would. Obviously being dead last in NFL and takeaways, which I had mentioned before. And I have to throw injuries in here because some injuries are too important, and I think Romo, Dez, Skandrick, Dunbar, those four were just too hard to overcome.
And for me, I'm going to lead off with front office in the 2014 offseason. To go through an entire offseason and not address in any true shape or form the need for a true QB2 in Dallas was inexcusable. Most of us, at least those of us with, you know, common sense, do believe Romo can get us a ring. However, that being said, you still need to have a serviceable backup, or more than serviceable backup, in the NFL. And we did not have that in Wheaton. You can go back and look at his starting record coming into this season and see that. And then they went and picked up Castle. I saw the hope there based on what he was able to do in New England, but he's been a journeyman since. Definitely not somebody you want to, you know, boat your season to. We see how this is going. So front office is going to be one. We did not address that having a true backup for Romo, and we paid head over foot for that. Number two, I'm going to go with coaching as well as with Cammy. I knocked mine down a little bit just because, to me, front office moves have to help coaches be in positions to win games, and they didn't do that. They didn't give Garrett what he needed in the event that Romo went down, and he did, unfortunately. Now, it fell back onto Garrett to coach the guys up. It didn't happen. I love Garrett to death, but he turned more into a team manager than a head coach this season. The guys are not quitting on him, which is saying a lot, especially given what is going on, or what was going on and will continue to go on once they lose another game in Philly. But you know how that goes. But then, like I said earlier in the show, seeing him not pull the trigger on a player like Kellen Moore, and I could see that if Castle was showing any signs of improvement. He's actually regressing with the playbook and the understanding of it and the understanding of his targets. The only one he's getting more comfortable with is Jason Witten. But, you know, that's easy to key in on if you're an opposing defensive coordinator, because, you know, Dez is having a really off season. Terrence Williams, he's nowhere to be found unless Romo is playing for the most part. So, and that goes to number three, which is player accountability. I don't see that players are holding themselves accountable for the mistakes that are being made. Now, I'm not saying that they're lackadaisical about it by any means at all, because that's not the feeling I get from the Cowboys locker room. Our players have a lot of heart, but I don't know if it's Romo not being there at center and him being the soul of the team and you know, being able to get guys to get over their mistakes. I mean, you're looking at a player like Dez. I mean, he's dropping ball after ball, and he just looks so dejected walking off of the field. You got players like Terrence Williams who have disappeared the entire season, and Romo comes back and he has the game of the year. Cole Beasley is pretty much disappearing because Romo knows how to use him, wherein the backups do not. And I just don't think, from a player standpoint, that players are stepping up like they're supposed to. And that goes back to what Cammy was saying about penalties and everything. We're shooting ourselves in the foot, killing drives, you know, like what happened in Green Bay. But you pressure Rodgers to the left. We get the pressure on him. We get a hit on him. He throws it out of bounds. It's supposed to be a dead play. They're supposed to punt the ball. And what do you got? You got a hold on Patman, killing me. So that's three. Four would have to be lack of takeaways. Marinelli is an absolute guru on defense. I have no explanation for why the takeaways have fallen off so precipitously. I am not going to pretend to have an answer. I just don't know. But that is my number four. And number five, our beloved owner and general manager needs to step away from the camera and let the head coach coach, because one and two on my list, they tend to, well, let me say, one gets in number two's way every once in a while. And at times you start, we all feel questions on Twitter as well. We have people, you know, tweeting us as if Jerry is the coach. Well, why didn't Jerry bench Castle? What? That doesn't make any sense. But it goes to the air that seems to exist from the Cowboys front office to the sideline, which is that Jerry has some type of, you know, in-game power. And that's just not the case. I should hope that's not the case, but just the fact that I'm even wondering that begs the question. So those are going to be the top five reasons that 2015 tanked. I could say injuries, but injuries underlie 1 through 5, because we didn't find a quarterback that backed up Tony in the event he got injured, and then he got injured and Garrett couldn't coach up, et cetera, et cetera. So there you have it. So is it 2016 yet?
Boy, it can't come fast enough, my friend. In some ways, what you're saying is that the injuries expose the other problems that had yes. been hidden by good health. You know, yes. I don't know how many of you guys saw this, but and again, the source is questionable. It was a Steve Dennis tweet in which he talked about someone who he talked to inside the organization that said that in the offseason, Jason Garrett pushed pretty hard to get a better backup quarterback, and he was outvoted. So I don't know how much truth there is to that, but you know,
interesting.
If in fact there is truth to that, it's a pretty nasty predicament, you know. And I think there's probably got to be some people in this front office who at least have the right to "and I told you so" if they're not actually saying it outright. You know, I mean, it gives me a little bit of hope that Garrett saw the team with some clear eyes and tried to make a bid and was turned down because of finances or whatever, draft capital or whatever it was that they felt they didn't want to exchange to try to upgrade the position. So here on the podcast, Landon and I have promised each other that we won't start talking about the offseason until the final gun sounds in week 17. And it's, believe me, it's been mighty hard to live up to that. So without talking about specifics, though, I want to pick both your brains and ask, where does the team go from here? So, like, putting on your GM hats for a second, what do you do to start cleaning up this mess?
I think that's fairly easy from my standpoint, because I think we've let it go on for so long this season that I almost think we can't fix this mess until the off season. Mm-hmm. I think if they were willing to replace someone like Castle for the remaining few games, they would have done so already. And with that being said, I'm on board to give some guys maybe a bigger role than they've been getting and see what you have with them. Guys like Bryce Butler, Robert Turbin, Lucky Whitehead, David Irvin, Kellen Moore, etc. And that, as they say, wins cure a multitude of illnesses. And so I think a lot of these problems were hidden for so long that finally came out. So I don't think we're honestly going to fix much until the off season, which I'm totally fine with, because I don't want to talk about the off season if we still mathematically have a chance. So I'm still on that train until it derails. So, yeah, I don't think we have much of a choice right now, to be honest.
Well, my stance on it is, and you guys know me well enough to know this, I feel like we can discuss the offseason without negating the fact that we're not mathematically eliminated. I don't think one annihilates the other. Right. Now, as I haven't gotten into specifics as far as doing my draft scouting yet, so we will avoid that. But as far as what I think needs to happen, what we have to find out, and I've been championing this for a couple weeks now, we have to see what we have in Kellen Moore. And a lot of pundits and a lot of fans and et cetera, they're saying, well, we're hearing that he's not this and we're hearing that he's not that. I don't do analysis on football with my ears, okay? I don't want to hear what you heard someone say about the guy. Put him in, show me Kellen Moore at NFL game speed for several games so that we can determine where we need to land as far as picking up the next Romo successor in the 2016 draft. Because what if it turns out that we have something in Kellen Moore, but then we reach to get the next quarterback? Okay, well, then we kind of just shot ourselves in the foot. But contrarily, if it turns out that Kellen Moore is nothing more than, and no pun intended, is nothing more than just a placeholder, then we need to know that. We need to know that. And if that is the case and he's just a placeholder at QB2 right now, QB3 technically, because Romo is still not on IR. Lord, why? If he is just a placeholder, then we have to go quarterback in the first round. I think it's unequivocal. It cannot be up for debate. We cannot come off of a season like this and see what a detriment it's been to not have that guy and then not make the move to correct that. And then the next move is going to have to be, you know, a wide receiver, because Terrence Williams, dude, just whatever. I'm not going to waste my words on that. And then we got to get corner. We got to get a cornerback, because we're most likely going to lose 24. Brandon Carr is probably going to end up with another team as well. So we're going to have to, with Skandrick coming back 2016, we're going to have someone opposite him, you know, hopefully a shutdown corner. Then you got Byron Jones over the top. If he can commit to safety instead of us having to drag him down the corner, I think he will be one of the best Cowboy players to ever play safety if we can get him committed to that position. But that's only going to happen if we solidify corner. So that's what I'm looking at for offseason. But again, that doesn't mean, ladies and gentlemen of the Twitter sphere, that I've given up on this season. That means that I know how to look forward and I know how to embrace what's happening right now.
Guys, if you're looking for more of the fire that these two spit, you may want to check out ctcsports.com. It's pretty fantastic. It's got all their opinions, and it's pretty great. Make sure you guys also follow them on Twitter. Pat's Twitter is at Voice of the Star. That's at VOICEOFTHESTAR. And Cammie's is at CammieAnnG. That's at CammieAnnG. And make sure you also follow the CTC Sports account, which is at Real CTC Sports, at RealCTCSports. Guys, thank you guys so much for coming on. It was much too long a wait for you guys to come on. So will you come back again soon?
Definitely. And thank you for having us. It was fun.
Absolutely. One quick tidbit, because I know SB Nation is trying to make sure that we stay behind them. It's actually ctclive.com.
Oh, my.
CTC Live.
I'm sorry. I didn't do that on purpose. Not at all.
We're trying to get it changed to CTC Sports, but, in the meantime.
Well, CTC Live, guys. Sorry about that. ctclive.com. So make sure you're hitting it up, and then when they change it over to CTC Sports, I'll just change this fix that I made in the podcast.
Right. Well, maybe that mistake will help us in this domain war that we're in for CTC Sports.
Well, good luck.
It's a little bit of a domain war, but right now ctclive.com, and we'll let you guys know when it changes up.
Well, good luck with that, and we'll have you back on when you change it too. How about that?
This sounds great, man. We'll be happy to be here.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Well, great stuff there, Rabble, from quite a dynamic duo of Cowboys podcasting. We better watch our backs here.
Indeed. My only question is, which one's Batman and which one's Robin? I know we're both the Joker.
Exactly.
Speaking of Jokers, let's bring in Scott and talk to him about the New York Football Jets.
All right, I'd like to welcome in Scott Salmon from Gangrene Nation. Scott, welcome.
Hi there, how you doing?
Doing well. Scott is an attorney by day and by night serves as the managing editor for Gangrene Nation, where he cranks out a wide variety of news and opinion posts on all things JETS. He's regularly featured in, quote, getting to know the enemy conversations. So we thought he'd be a great candidate to offer some clarity about the Cowboys' upcoming opponent. So, Scott, again, welcome. And in the offseason, the Jets fired longtime head coach Rex Ryan and hired former Cardinals defensive coordinator and Cowboys secondaries coach Todd Bowles. How is the Bowles administration shaping up so far? And what has he brought to New York? And in what ways are the Jets different from Ryan's teams?
Well, I like to say that with Todd Bowles, as opposed to Rex Ryan, it feels like the grown-ups are finally at the table. a lot of things that he brings are very similar to Rex Ryan. Obviously, you have a great defense. You have a sometimes struggling offense, very similar to Rex Ryan. But I think the whole personality of the team is significantly different than when Rex was here. When with Rex, they would get pumped up for one game against the Patriots and then lose to the worst team in the league the next week. With Bowles, it seems to be a little bit more consistent. The team doesn't get too high. They don't get too low. It's sort of, I'm kind of afraid to say Belichick-esque, obviously, because he hasn't done anything to really earn that title. But it's in terms of personality, it's a lot closer to Belichick, it seems, than someone like Rex.
At an impressive 9-5, on-field returns for Bowles and his staff look great so far. What is the Jets' playoff outlook, and what do they need to get into the tournament, and what teams are they keeping their eye on as the final stretch comes our way?
So for the last two spots in the AFC, it's really going to come down to three teams. It's going to come down to the Jets, the Chiefs, and the Steelers. Mm. If the Jets win out, they'll almost certainly win, certainly get into the playoffs. The problem is if the Steelers also win out, they'll get in over the Jets over due to the conference tiebreakers. So the Jets need a little bit of help. They need the Steelers to at least to lose one more game than the Jets do in the last three games of the season. Alternatively, if the Chiefs lose two more games, then the Jets should be able to get in. But they have a little bit of an uphill battle just because they need a little bit of help. They don't have they're not really in full control of their destiny at this point.
Well, that really stinks. The good news is they seem to have been coming on lately. But before, I want to talk a little bit about their recent win. But before I do, you know, you were mentioning that Bowles is somewhat Belichickian, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you've been in a division with the Patriots who have won, I think it's like 13 of the last 15 division titles.
It hurts hearing that.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm obviously not a division rival, and it hurts me even saying it. So I guess, Mike, you know, the question I have for you is, how much do you hate the Patriots? I mean, I'm trying to think of, like, Landon, imagine what it would be like if the Eagles had won 13 of the last 15 division titles.
Well, it's actually kind of like how the rest of the division probably felt about the Cowboys in the 90s is what it's probably mm-hmm. like.
Or the 70s, yeah.
Or the 70s, yeah.
So what's it like being in the division with the Patriots? It must be tough.
Let me put it this way. When I started dating my girlfriend, she didn't let you know anything about football. So I was telling her about the Jets, about football. And she goes, okay, well, what do I need to know about the Jets? I said, there's two main things you need to know. The first is the chant, J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. And the second thing is, screw Tom Brady. Those are the two big things when it comes to being a Jets fan. At the end of the day, there is no one. At the end of the day, it's really the Patriots game and we're just or world, and we're just living in it. Mm-hmm. So you go into each season assuming that they're going to win the division, and you sort of who is jockeying for second place.
Right, right. And this year that's you. So let's talk about one of the reasons why that's you. Last mm-hmm. Sunday, the Jets enjoyed a fairly easy 30-8 win over the Titans, which was their third win mm-hmm. in a row. So what were the keys to the win, and what? Sometimes you learn a lot about a team this time of year, and sometimes you don't. So what, if anything, did you learn about the Jets on Sunday?
So with the Jets, like I mentioned earlier, they have a sometimes good, sometimes off, sometimes bad offense, sort of mediocre. And what really tends to happen is the Jets need to have a quick start to the offense. If they don't get that quick start, then the offense is going to struggle the entire game. The defense can only get you so much. What we saw with the Titans was that they were able to get a touchdown on their first drive, which is sort of greased the wheels for the rest of the game. In games where they've struggled to get a quick start, they really struggled to win. For example, the Eagles, the Jets really struggled in the beginning of the game, and they weren't able to get things moving. So it's not a consistent offense, unless they're able to get a hot start, and that's what happened this past week against the Titans.
One of Bowles' coaching hires was veteran offensive coordinator Chan Gailey, and actually we were just discussing Chan earlier. We are familiar with Chan as the Cowboys head coach and de facto OC in the late 90s, and we were just discussing how we kind of felt like maybe he got fired entirely too soon. Mm-hmm. What are the keys to his current offense, and how should we expect to see him attack the Cowboys?
I think you can expect in two ways. Chris Ivory and Brandon Marshall. Those are the two keys to the Jets offense. They're going to go to Chris Ivory early and often, and whenever they need a play on offense or in the passing game, they're going to go to Brandon Marshall. It's really that simple. They like to get those two guys the ball as much as possible. Obviously, Eric Decker comes after Brandon Marshall, but he's definitely after him. Their first option is always going to be Brandon Marshall.
So a little follow-up there in terms of the offense. You know, one of the things you said earlier in the conversation was that, you know, one of the ways in which Bowles Jets are like the Ryan Jets is that they're, you know, not the most prolific offense. So I guess my question mm-hmm. Is that a matter of scheme? Is that a matter of talent? Like, why are they struggling? What's the main reason?
I think it's a matter of approximately the quarterback. Ryan Fitzpatrick's having, from what it looks like, the best year of his career. But he's no Tony Romo. I'm a big fan of Romo, but he's not an elite quarterback, and that's really where they struggle. He's having a great year, but it's still not quite at that level where you can always count on him. And that's where the struggles come from at the end of the day. If he's not, if he doesn't get off to a good game, then there's only so much the rest of the offense can do.
So if you had an elite quarterback, you feel pretty confident that that would be an elite group?
If I think if the Jets had an elite, I'll say even top 10 quarterback, I think the Jets should be playoff favorites. Or not playoff, seven, sorry, Super Bowl favorites.
Really? Wow.
I think I honestly think the defense is one of the best in the league. Top three, I would say. And the offense, they have Brandon Marshall, they have Eric Decker, they have Chris Ivory, they have a decently good offensive line. They have a number of running backs behind Ivory. There's really a lot there. The real weakness is Fitzpatrick. As good as he's been, he's still the weak link in the offense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, so speaking of the Jets' formidable defense, first-year Jets defensive coordinator, Casey Rogers, is another former Cowboy coach. He was a defensive tackles and then a defensive lines coach under Bill Parcells from, I think, somewhere from 2003 to 2007, in that range.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming that Bowles is still is in many ways the defensive coordinator, and he's working with Rogers closely on game planning and play calling. So what are he and Bowles concocting for opposing offenses? And here's the killer question. How can they possibly slow down Marcus Mariota and Matt Castle in back-to-back weeks?
Well, I'll tell you, we're seeing a lot from Bowles and what he did when he was last year when he was with the Arizona Cardinals. The Jets right now are the heaviest blitzing team in the league. The most plays you're going to see four or more rushers coming after the quarterback. A lot of cornerback blitzes, things like that. The other thing we see a lot is, and this is similar to Rex Ryan, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of multiple defense. What I suspect they're going to do against the Cowboys in particular is switch from their normal 3-4 to their 4-3 defense. That's what Bowles did last year against the when he was with the Cardinals and played against the Cowboys, and I think we're going to see something similar. It's very matchup-specific defense. It tends to be more 3-4, but they switch to 4-3 and other teams depending on the offense they're playing. I suspect that's what's going to happen in this upcoming game.
Okay, so final question. Mm-hmm. Who wins on Sunday? And because we have a pretty good idea what your answer will be, what will be the keys to the win?
Well, look, I will never, ever guarantee that the Jets are going to win. I'm not Joe Namath. I've seen this team lose games they should win way too often. Again, the Eagles game is a perfect example of that. Should have won, didn't. I think they should win
that
game.
Yeah, you should have won that game. We're still a little bit upset with you about that, but we're going to let it slide, Scott.
Try sitting in the stands and watching the team. It should almost be the team that they should have, and then coming up short again at the very end. It was awful. So I'm not going to guarantee the Jets are going to win just because I've seen them blow that too often. Again, I think like what I said earlier, I think the key of the game is going to be Ryan Fitzpatrick. If he can get off to a quick start against the Cowboys, if they score, let's say a touchdown in the first quarter, then I think the Jets will win. If they can't, if they're struggling in the first half like they did against the Raiders, then they're really going to struggle. And at that point, it's anybody's guess who's going to win.
Well, I think that the one thing that if there's any consolation for Cowboys fans, and we were talking about this earlier before we brought you in, is that the Cowboys, for all their struggles this year, have played hard and managed to keep games close. So I think that one of the things you don't want to do is struggle early and keep an inferior team in the game.
Anyway, and with the exception of the game against the Giants, the Jets have not particularly done well in close games. They either blown the other team out, or they struggle and come up just short. So if it's a close game, I'd probably lean towards the Cowboys just based on how the Jets have done this season. So if it's not going to be a blowout, then it's really anybody's guess.
Interesting. Okay. So listen, Scott, that's great stuff. I just want to remind everybody that, as we head up to the Saturday's game, go check out Scott and all his fine crew of writers over at Gangrene Nation. You can follow, I know he's one of several people who man this account on Twitter. It's at Gangrene Nation. That's at GANGREENNATION. And all three of those words are capitalized. Scott, listen, great stuff. please come back and join us when we play again in probably 4 years from now, will you?
Absolutely. As long as you guys invite me back.
All right, we will. That was great.
Well, Rabble, another week, another game, another podcast. What do we got for our listeners next week?
Actually, next week we're going to take a week off for the holiday because we want to return rested and ready for podcast excellence right before Week 17. So we'll be back for the Week 17 contest against the Redskins. We're going to invite a couple of special guests in for a little season review. And then once the NFC East champion is eliminated from the playoffs, which should be pretty soon in the wild card round, what we're planning on doing is organizing a division roundtable with guys who cover all four teams, so we can really talk in greater depth about just what transpired here in the 2015 season in terms of the division, and then also look forward to what's on the horizon for all four teams.
I don't know that I really want to talk to any of those guys, frankly, Rabble. Sorry, but that's how I feel. Anyways, guys, make sure, if you don't want to talk to anybody in the NFC East, you know where you go? blogtheboys.com, because there's only going to be Cowboys fans there. I mean, maybe every once in a while Jimmy K might pop in, but you can mute him. It's not a big deal. But make sure you are going to blogtheboys.com for all your information about the Cowboys. I'm sure there'll be plenty of schadenfreude once the Giants or Eagles, whoever loses the first round of the playoffs, they lose. So make sure you hang around for that. And again, just for all off-season, regular season news, blogtheboys.com is the best spot for all of that. So make sure you check them out. Follow them on Facebook, Blogging the Boys, and of course on Twitter at Blogging the Boys. And until 2 weeks from now, happy trails.
Happy trails, y'all.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds when we're together?
Happy trails.